We talk some must-win games for some interesting programs. Update on conference realignment, Fat Bear Week picks, and race for the case, of course.
Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
Do you pay taxes, Ross? Do you have a confession to make here?
Ross Dellinger.
We're two minutes in. Apples, pumpkins, and Dan driving on I-69 with tornadoes.
And SI's Pat Forty.
When we reach the Tarleton State stage, we're at last call in club realignment. Let's wrap this thing up and get out the door here, please.
Here's Pat, Ross, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod. And listen, you take a cursory look at this week. Slate of games. Only one ranked on ranked. Missouri visiting Texas A&M. Very big game. Obviously, that's not going to get the 12 million or whatever that watched Georgia, Alabama. But that's a nice game, and we'll talk about that game. We're going to pick games. But there, as any college football fan knows, these are the weekends when, like, all hell breaks loose.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be somebody.
Don't pick the apples. You're going to miss
careful.
Them.
Yeah, but I still, we know we got, we just said, like, the next 3 weeks are you want to be locked in. So pick but monitor. Pick but, I don't think, are apples ready? I don't, it's too early. It's not foliage.
I don't know. You can get a pumpkin out there somewhere.
Oh, at
plenty of pumpkins.
What's our guy in Purdue's, Spangler Farms? He's got that farm stand
Spangler
outside
Farms.
Of Muncie.
Yeah.
Go visit the Spangler Farm stand.
Go get your pumpkin.
Best pumpkins in whatever Muncie County. It's not Muncie County, but whatever it is. Sorry. One time I was
Yorktown, Indiana, greater Muncie.
Muncie metropolitan area. Yeah. One time I was driving through Indiana, and I was on that, I think it's Interstate 69 to Fort Wayne in Indianapolis, and they had an alert come over. Like, there's a tornado, like the weather was getting really bad. And they go, there's a tornado coming through like Clay County or whatever county they call out. I'm like, what freaking county am I in right now? Like, I don't know. Do I go faster or am I driving into Clay? Like, this is not helpful. I don't know a county in. I know I'm on the interstate.
You know,
be like, if you're by exit 262, get off the damn road. I don't know. I was like,
Google it while driving.
I'm like,
80.
And I'm like, do I keep going? Mm-hmm. Do I go faster? Do I go slower? All right.
We're two minutes in. Apples, pumpkins, and Dan done. Driving on I-69 with tornadoes.
How about that Alabama-Georgia nice. Game, man? That was a... Okay, but there are some very interesting games here. Like must-win games or must-show-ups or fascinating narrative games, which we're better at than breaking down the games, although our pick race for the case picks are insanely good.
Hey, we're doing very well.
Speak for yourself.
You know what? No,
hey, you had a good week.
You
are
14, 15, and 1.
Oh, yeah. Wow. I've came back almost to 500? Yeah. How did that happen?
Because people who analyze picks are full of it. It's like the TV guy breaking down the video. Hey, look, the guy's wide open. Yeah, no kidding. How'd this play work? Yeah. I'm 19-11. Pat's 18-12. Joe's 18-12. I can tell you the amount of time I will start thinking about our picks in about 30 minutes or this week. So
4 and 5 games back. All right, not bad. Not bad. I'll take it after this.
Nobody
start.
Knows what they're talking about.
No.
That's a banger of a. And these are games I don't even want to pick sometimes. You sit there and go, I don't want to pick. All right. Anyway, there's some good games here.
Yeah.
And I want to start with this one because I feel like absolute must win. And it's not easy. They put themselves in this position. But Ole Miss is going to South Carolina. We don't quite know what South Carolina is. But they certainly have the ability, as they showed against LSU and have showed at times this season, to be pretty tough. And for this big hyped Ole Miss season, playoff season, host a game, contend for the SEC, Lane Kiffin, bell of the ball down in Gainesville, everybody wants him. After the Kentucky game, this now becomes not just for a playoff chase because they have tougher games ahead, but where are we? How much does Lane Kiffin and the Rebels need to win on Saturday in a place that isn't easy to win, Pat?
Oh, this is a fascinating one. I agree that, yes, there's a lot of pressure on Ole Miss to get right. And that's the problem in the SEC. You drop a home game that a lot of people thought you were supposed to win to Kentucky, and you're up against it because the rest of the schedule's murder. So Shane Beamer, home dog, scary, very scary. Lenora Sellers, quarterback, who absolutely lit up a couple of teams early, was out injured, and he's back, according to the depth chart that Beamer released this week. So South Carolina is – they are very dangerous in this spot, I think. You know, the game against LSU, you could make a case they could or should have won. They had a 100-yard pick six called back, lost by 3 points in a wild game. Oof, that's a tough one. But if you're Mississippi, you better be ready. You cannot come out and stagger around like you did against Kentucky, or you're going to lose again. And then after that, you're at LSU, and you got Oklahoma, and you got Georgia still. So, yes, this is a massive game for Ole Miss.
Yeah, and you know, we in the expanded playoff era. I mean, I think everybody expects, given the recruiting haul and the NIL stuff with Ole Miss, for them to be in the playoff. I think even their fan base, you know, would definitely say that it was playoff or bust this year. And if you lose two out of your first six games, given the schedule, as Pat mentioned, it's going to be really hard. I mean, even at 10-2, right? If you win out after losing this one, you might not be in the playoff. So this looms really large. And, you know, I spent time with the Ole Miss folks and the collective folks and the NIL people when they played at Wake Forest and kind of followed them around and stuff. And I mean, let's just say that the expectation was not to lose to Kentucky. I mean, I think most of their fears were October 12th at LSU. In Tiger Stadium, and there's an expectation that, hey, we can get to 6-0 there, and then that's a big game, and boom, they lose Kentucky. And now, as Dan said, this South Carolina, we saw South, speaking of LSU, right, we saw South Carolina probably should have beat LSU, outplayed them for most of the game. So this does feel like a really big game for Ole Miss to keep its hopes alive for, again, what I think was the expectation level entering the season, which was to reach the playoff and at least get one of the at-large bids.
Still got at LSU, as you said, and Georgia visiting in November. A lot of the rest breaks nicely. At Florida, Mississippi State's obviously struggling. Yeah. At Arkansas, Oklahoma at home. But
it's the first time that they don't play Alabama since 1991. So they got the big break there because there's right. No longer the divisional setup. But
This is a must go. If I was a good host, I would have just transitioned immediately into the Missouri A&M game, but of course I'm not. Missouri also has very, very high hopes on what they can do. And this is a big season, big expectations in Columbia. They have done an unbelievable job during NIL to run their collective, get their roster going. Eli Drinkwitz has the tools to compete here. They need victories, though. And this is, you know, Texas A&M is, I just think it's like a wild card here. Lost at Notre Dame, haven't really been challenged since. Beat at Florida, and they beat Arkansas, as they tend to always do up in Arlington, Texas. But This is going to be pumped up. Early game maybe helps them out. 11 a.m. for Missouri. But how much does Mizzou need this victory this weekend, and how big of a game it is? They still have, just to quickly recap, they got the big trip to the Junkyard, UMass. They have Alabama coming in. Other than that, pretty favorable schedule. All they got is Auburn, Oklahoma at home, at Carolina, at Miss State, and then Arkansas at the end of the year. So, playoffs or bust a little bit in Columbia. Pat, Mizzou.
Yeah. No doubt that they did not get a brutal schedule like some other SEC teams did. So this is, yeah, the opportunity is there. And this is the kind of game you got to win, I think, if you want to go to the playoff. Now, they could still drop it but then you that increases the necessity of maybe winning at Alabama and certainly beating Oklahoma at home. So big, big, big game here. Missouri's been okay so far. They've played relatively well. Defense was looking like a big question mark coming into the season. Then they started with two shutouts, and they were pretty good against Boston College as well. Gave up one long kind of broken play touchdown there, but only 21 points. They were not very good against Vanderbilt. They were kind of lucky to get past Vanderbilt without going into overtime. They just haven't quite clicked and put it all together yet. Brady Cook has been okay at quarterback, hasn't done anything spectacular, hadn't done anything terrible. Last year, his numbers were better, and that might have been because he benefited from having the leading rusher in the United States in Cody Schrader, and they've got decent running backs, but they don't have him this year. So, you know, I think it's just going to be, can Missouri show up and make plays when there's pressure and a quality opponent? And so they absolutely have to meet the moment here in a tough environment.
Dan, I just really hope that Missouri is not looking ahead to the next opponent. I mean,
how can't you?
At UMass, October 12th looms large. So you just hope the Tigers are focused on the Aggies and not the Minutemen, the 1-4 Minutemen.
You want foliage, you go to Western Mass in October. You'll be blinded by it.
There you go.
Better than watching football in Western Mass.
Funny story. I don't know if you guys have seen this one. Marcel Reed, who's been starting the last couple games for Texas A&M and playing really well.
Yes.
Redshirt freshman. Actually was committed originally to Ole Miss. Just talked about the Rebels and decommitted in as A&M, replacing Connor Wegman, who has been injured. And it appears that he may just keep the job, Marcel Reed. Well, his sister works on staff at Missouri. And so Eli Drinkwitz, I don't know if he may be joking or not joking, but said earlier this week that she was not allowed at practice.
Guardrails.
This week.
Guardrails.
Football coach, probably not kidding.
Yeah. Wow. So whose loyalty would you have? Yeah. Paycheck or sibling?
It's a tough one.
I don't know.
I think I would tell Marcel, I'll call you next week, not this week.
Banned from practice. Let's just not talk. Banned from practice. Probably not joking, honestly.
Probably not. Yeah, it's Bria Reed. She's like a, you know, recruiting director or something like that. One of those titles, those recruiting titles.
Total side note, because this is what we do. Did you see the social media post about Ryan Williams, the great Alabama freshman wide receiver, and Serena Williams calling her my 17-year-old cousin?
Yes. Yeah.
Like, all of a sudden, that little factoid comes out. Oh, I'm also related to Serena and then Venus. It's also funny. Venus is my favorite athlete of all time. She's the nicest person. Like, she used to overshadow her little sister, and then now no one even remembers Venus. Like, she won, like, 10 grand slams.
Oh, she's phenomenal. Do we actually have confirmation, though, that this is a cousin?
Yeah, that's
thing?
What I was about to ask.
You're going to tell Serena Williams she's wrong? She wants to claim, she could claim me as a cousin. I'd be like, cool, let's do it.
Well, I thought she was just joking because the last names were the same. And that was, you know, like, hey, cousin.
There's a lot of Williamses
in
the world.
I don't know. We don't know. I don't know. I haven't seen it anywhere. I haven't seen
jokingly,
it confirmed anywhere.
I mean, but, there's a lot of Williamses. That's the one she chose? Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know.
You know, you're sitting on the couch watching football like, oh, yeah, I'm going to say that guy's my cousin.
Well, maybe not. Maybe we'll find out. All I would say is this would explain a lot.
Get the podcast sleuths on it.
Yeah. So. Is Serena Williams and Ryan Williams actually related? I mean, cousin that's the thing about cousin. Like, there's a lot. You can start getting into cousins, could be multiple things, but this would explain a great deal. The footwork along the baseline.
Yeah, right.
I would think that'd be something I'd be bragging about, though, right?
I mean, if I were Ryan Williams, that would be first line in my biography, my bio at Alabama. My cousin is Serena Williams.
Don't they make the players, when you get to school, you got to fill out a little form and meet with the sports info department and be like, you know, any interesting, you know? Yeah, actually, my cousin's Serena Williams and Venus. Like, where's Venus getting? No, again.
Yeah.
So other people who are certainly more versed in this have dug into this, it looks like, according to the internet. And it does appear that she's joking. She's like, you know, saying cuz, like they're actually not related, maybe. That's what just it a
random.
Like.
Random. There's a lot of Williamses. It's not like a random name.
No, yeah. But like if you're AL.com, this is like all of a sudden, oh my God, we better find this out.
This is Click City stuff here. Yeah. I mean, look, I'm clicking. Yeah, I'm clicking through all these stories.
Five part series on this. Yeah. This will get you an APS. I don't know. All right, back to the games. I don't know. I can't call this a must win. But I don't know. It's must win for Clemson, but I'm intrigued at this Florida State situation and where this is headed because, look, this used to be a marquee game, and this is set up on a Saturday when there aren't a lot of games, and this was supposed to be like it's on, I think, ABC at 7:30 at night, and Clemson-Florida State used to be a thing, and as recently as 5 weeks ago, you would have thought it was going to be a big thing. Instead, Florida State is 1-4, and the little old Clemson's coming into town. We said he's got to privately be chuckling about how last year Dabo Swinney got criticized for not hitting the portal like FSU and just sticking with his guys, his high school recruits. But the consistency that high school recruits can bring, it may limit you from hitting that total peak that Clemson once had. But sitting pretty good right now. And here's the thing about Florida State. They need to win or keep it. Like if this gets ugly down there, and I don't know what'll happen. I don't really know how good Clemson is or not, but like Florida State, they've had 3 4-star recruits decommit in the last month. Attendance isn't great. It probably will be for this game, but we'll see. Might not be. I don't know. Nighttime, you got to get a lot of people to Tallahassee. It's not, you know, easiest place to get to for everybody. You're trying to build, like, you would have thought they would have gotten a huge boost and momentum off of this 13-0 season. It ends poorly, but like you got Mike Norvell. I mean, Alabama, there was Alabama interest. Like Florida's not any good right now. They're probably going to, you know, no one knows who their coach is. Like Florida State should be crushing high school recruiting, building on the momentum of this perfect season. We're back. Florida State remains an incredible place to go play football and go to school. Like none of that changes. And instead this program is reeling. And if they're not doing well in recruiting and not that momentum, you're relying on the transfer portal to work. And that's a dice game of trying to hit. I just feel like this could get like the scenes on Saturday night could be either hopeful and positive, or it could get really ugly where there's like 30,000 people in the stands at the end of the game and Clemson's up 42-7. Pat?
Yeah. This is like, remember when the ship hit the bridge in Baltimore in the summer and the thing just collapsed like immediately? That's what Florida State is. Like, how did that happen? What happened? How did they just collapse completely? So it's shocking. But it's not showing any sign of changing this year. And as you said, that the real warning sign is the recruiting situation where, okay, you know, you could perhaps explain we had one complete disaster of a year, but it's not the definition of the direction of the program. It's just a blip. But if you're not getting recruits either, that's not good. And the problem here, I want to talk about this game a little bit more later, but people have been, you know, killing DJ Uiagalelei for his play this year. He has not been good, but he's probably out with his broken finger. Brock Glenn, the backup, has been the back. He hadn't gotten in the games for a reason. He's a 35% passer. They put him in this last week. He was 0-for-4, which pretty well was how he quarterbacked last year, too. So they got major, major issues there. I just think the toxicity is high and getting higher. And as you alluded to, Dan, I expect a lot of Clemson fans to be there. And I think the Florida State fans will turn quickly if this game starts badly. And Clemson's on fire, by the way.
Yeah, yeah, Clemson is on fire, right? It seems like Georgia really made them angry at the start of the year by clobbering them in the second half of that season opener. And they've been kind of roaring ever since. You know, Pat mentioned it about DJ Uyelunga-Lele. I'm sure I said that, butchered that one. But people blame him, and I understand. I get it, right? I've watched. But they can't move the ball on the ground either. Like they're not creating holes offensively. I mean, they have like the worst rushing, I think, offense in one of the worst, maybe in college football, maybe the worst in the power league, power conference football. I mean, they cannot run the ball at all. And if you can't run the ball at all, it's gonna hurt. You know, it's gonna hurt everything defensively too. And that's been the story here for me is the Florida State offensive line and their lack of moving the football on the ground. And there seems to be really no progress in that department the last few games, like through the season. It doesn't seem like they're getting better at any of that. So this could get ugly, I feel like. And Clemson, like Pat did say, is on quite a tear offensively. Cade Klubnik has played really well. And they've been able to run the ball really well, but they're, like I said, Klubnik and the receivers, they're moving the ball well, and defensively they've also been playing really good. So I just, this could really get out of hand, and you wonder, as Dan said, if this is a blowout, the scenes late in that game in Tallahassee could be good content for the internet. Put it that way.
I just, like, FSU has 11 recruits, and I know recruiting is one thing, but it's how you look. This season's shot. It's the future, right?
Yeah.
You're coming off a 13-0 season with this very good coach in Mike Norvell, who's had great success. You sign him to this huge deal. Yeah, it broke bad. Jordan Travis gets hurt. The whole season kind of ends with this, you know, very frustration. You're suing the ACC. It's just, they're ranked, Rivals currently has them with 11 recruits, ranked 39th in the rankings. And
that ain't gonna get it done.
Mm-mm. And yeah, you can close and you can get this, but because again, like, there's nothing inherently has changed about Florida State as a place to go recruit. Like, some places you have to overperform to get recruits to come there. This is FSU. What are we talking about? Right? Like, kids should want to go there. And your arch rival, Florida, is not doing anything either. So the whole state's kind of open. Yeah, Miami's doing well and whatever. And everyone's going to raid the place, always. But you should be getting your share. And if you're not getting them, how do you... Like, this is the year you project out and you go, well, yeah, in 2-3 years, this is why our line is good, because we landed a bunch of guys we could develop. Then we're plugging in. You're not just going to get Jared Verse out of the portal every time. So just a really dicey spot. And I just feel like this could turn ugly or could show some life. I'm sure they're having a big recruiting weekend because they probably set it up or as good as they're going to get at this point. And you sure as heck don't want to watch Clemson walk in. They recruit Florida awful well, and Coach Sweeney just put the foot on the neck. So huge game there.
Well, and if you're not winning on the field, right? Like, for your fans and for your future, winning off the field is, even for perception's sake, is pretty important. I mean, look what's going on. I think at Auburn, right? You see a terrible, awful stuff off on the field, but off the field. Right, they're selling the future because I think they have like a top three recruiting class right now.
Yeah, just got a quarterback to flip from Notre Dame.
Baby. Yeah, Deuce flipped from Notre Dame, which that was a heck of a recruit that Notre Dame held that long, honestly. I don't know the last time Deuce Knight, big-time QB. Notre Dame went into Loosedale, Mississippi, which is not a place Notre Dame's normally trooping around recruiting. It's not like Toledo Catholic Central or something. That's right. More Notre Dame turf. But yeah, that's a big flip. And yeah, then you sell the future. I don't know what FSU has right now, and I just can't even believe that we're talking about that, considering how unbelievable. They could win the national championship last year if they don't have injuries.
Yeah.
I mean, absolutely. Yeah. And now all of a sudden it's like, what the heck is going on? All right, one more really fascinating game. We'll pick some other games later. Rutgers is at Nebraska, and Rutgers is 4-0. We've talked a great deal about Indiana's ability to maybe go 11-1, 10-2 with this schedule. But Rutgers' schedule is also pretty favorable. They're 4-0. Greg Schiano just sort of, you know, builds and gets them to credibility. Has always got them to credibility. But you say, you know, what can you go another level? This would be a very tough, big road test for them. Beat Howard, Akron. They won at Virginia Tech. They beat Washington last Friday night in a really nice scene. They've certainly mobilized their fan base and all that. Now they go into Nebraska. After that, it's Wisconsin at home, UCLA at home, at USC. Then they got Minnesota at home, at Maryland, Illinois at home, and at Michigan State. Super hard to win all your games. I don't care who you are. And so probably this middle of the Big Ten is going to beat each other up, generally how it's going to play. And but you're staring at a Rutgers season that if they get by this Nebraska game, you know, look out. And everybody who's ever been around Rutgers says, boy, if they ever got their act truly together, why aren't they good? Why haven't they been better? Greg Schiano is the only one that's ever got them to be like, hey, we're credible. Can he take a next step? So I'm watching this game, Pat. What do you think?
Oh, I'm watching it too. I think it's fascinating. I looked at this game from about four different angles for other reasons earlier in the week. And like, I was like, why is Rutgers a 7-point underdog? And then you start digging into their stats. I mean, this is like a Schiano team where you are making something out of a little. You're making more out of it than you probably have. They've been like, they're averaging 5.4 yards per rush, but their opponents are averaging 5.9, which is really surprising to me for a Schiano team. They have not been able to stop the run. Athien Kalaiokmanis at quarterback has been pretty good, reliable, an upgrade over what they had, but he hasn't been dazzling. Their turnover margin is not spectacular, which is another thing where Schiano's often really made hay. They're not blocking kicks yet. One thing, like the time of possession, they're holding the ball, which really doesn't matter for most programs these days. For someone like Rutgers, who wants to run the ball, shrink the game, play field position, it does. They're averaging 33 minutes and 40 seconds, and their opponent's 26 minutes and 22 seconds. Those 8 minutes may well matter in a Rutgers game. So, you know, I'm intrigued to see now if they can go on the road against a pretty good team and win. I'm not sure Virginia Tech is a pretty good team. So this is a big, big test, big step up.
They play, Pat mentioned there, they play old school, right? I mean, they hand the ball off to my own guy like 25, 30 times a game. That's what it feels like. And they just pound it and keep the ball. And you know, keep the defense. I mean, they just it's like an old school type of throwback team. I mean, the same stuff we've seen from Greg Schiano, you know, kind of in his previous stop there. And that's how they're winning, which it's crazy because a program like Rutgers that doesn't get the top talent and is playing against a lot of the top talent, you would think have to do something different. But no, they're just playing like old school, solid, you know, good defense and handing it off to perhaps the best running back or one of the best running backs, at least in the country. He gets overshadowed a little bit by Jenty. Manungai does, but he's really good too. So this is in Nebraska's defense, I think, has proven to be one of the best in the country so far. And so that's good. You know, black shirt's back. There's a lot of excitement in Lincoln about that. This would be, I have a feeling this one's going to be like 16-13.
Oh, hell yeah. Big Ten football. Nebraska could use a win too, because they got their fans hyped up and they got to give them something. But I still feel, you got Dylan Raiola. I feel like as long as he ain't going anywhere, the future of that program's good. All right. That's some of our intriguing games. We're going to pick more games, including some of those later on Race for the Case. But let's take a break right now. Let's clean up. We had a lot of this on the last show. We won't need to break it all down, but some of the realignment moves, if you care, are in. So we'll talk about this briefly, are in place. Texas State declined a Mountain West offer and is now going to sit there and see who else might want them. Could still be the Pac-12, could be the AAC, could be something else, could stay where they're at, whatever they want to do. Gonzaga basketball has joined the Pac-12, as we alluded to. Nice little basketball league upgrade for Gonzaga. Maybe not all that they wanted, but a good mix of good teams and all that. We discussed that. UTEP is in the Mountain West now, so that's one of the two spots they needed. That one made too much sense not to do. Probably always should have been in the Mountain West, and I think it's really energized people in El Paso. Talking to some people down
there. Hype man Dan Wetzel gets an assist there.
They deserve it. Go Miners. What else? What's the next domino to fall, you think, Ross?
Yeah, if you listen to the Tuesday pod, all that happened after the pod, and we basically predicted all of it,
there you go,
right,
man.
Happening. I mean, there was never a chance that listen. Yeah, we got the crystal ball. I don't think there's ever a chance Texas State was going to the Mountain West. That one didn't make any sense, and they were probably using that offer to try to get a Pac-12 offer. That's what it seemed like on the outside, and it didn't come, or it hasn't come yet, at least from the Pac-12. Yeah, you know, the next move, Dan, I think will be the Mountain West adding, you know, completing their haul here and adding a team, a school or two. They need one more. Actually, as we sit now, the Pac-12 and the Mountain West both need one more full member to be designated as a conference. They each have 7 full members. Pac-12 has, you know, a non-football playing member, and as you mentioned, Gonzaga in the Mountain West, at least for now, has a football only playing member in Hawaii, and those don't count to the 8. So they need one more each. That's where we sit. I think the Mountain West will probably complete their haul first over the next few days. I would guess certainly within probably the next week.
Who are the contenders for the final rose here?
Yeah.
Can we have a rose ceremony? Yeah. Doesn't Jesse Palmer show? Yeah. Jesse Palmer can do this, right? He's a college football guy.
These will be some interesting candidates.
New Mexico State,
you know,
Sacramento. There's only Mexico one more State. Rose.
Yeah. I mean, you know, they could make Hawaii a full member. They're football only. They could make them a full member. They could offer membership to New Mexico State. They could offer membership to FCS program, one they've been talking to, I think, on and off, have been Tarleton State in Texas. Conference USA has also been talking to Tarleton State, I think, quite a bit. That goes back like a year. And then there's Sacramento State, right, that has been making this incredible public push and campaign like I've never seen before. I've never seen anything like this. Nobody knew they existed.
It's
bizarre. President's very aggressive. And all of this, the last 2 weeks, they've rolled out all of these announcements, millions and millions of dollars, new stadium being built, NIL money raised, all this stuff geared toward getting a Pac-12 invite. And it just seems like that's right. A very, very long shot. But maybe if the Mountain West has to drop down to FCS ranks, do they come into play at all? I don't know. And in the Pac-12, I think there's a little bit of a pause. And I think we talked about it maybe on Tuesday. The goal was this week to get Gonzaga locked up, or on Monday, Gonzaga locked up, and then kind of take it easy, right? Go to maybe media networks, explore a little more real numbers, and then come back out and pitch those numbers to some possible football playing full members, and they need one. So that's kind of the situation, it seems, right now.
A couple things there. That Sacramento State is like the coaching searches where somebody's been out of a job for like 5 years, and you know, sources say Jim Smith would be interested in the job. It's because people forgot Jim Smith existed, and he has to remind them, I'm still out here. I'll come take your job. That's Sacramento State in realignment here. I tweeted that if when we reach the Tarleton State stage, we're at last call in club realignment. Like, let's wrap this thing up and get out the door here, please. Okay.
2 a.m. That's feeling real good.
It's 2 a.m. They're turning off
the lights.
Putting the bar, you're looking around, music stop.
Yeah.
The bartender's giving you a look like, get the F out of here.
Get it done or don't.
And everybody that's still in there is looking a little bit ashamed. Yeah. Like,
well, the lights come on.
So are you.
The lights come on.
So are you.
Yeah. Right. Make good decisions, people. Make good decisions.
Exactly. The interesting aspect of this is the Pac-12 hitting pause maybe a little bit here. And Ross said you know, maybe trying to get some tangible TV numbers to put in front of people, because one of the complaints or criticisms, I guess, I heard of this is that it was very much a venture of just trust us. Look, it's going to be great. We're going to get 12 to 15 million. Everybody's like, where are you? You know, can you show us your work? And they didn't really have a lot of work to show. So I think that's now the stage. And then maybe you go back. I think there's a chance they go back to the American Athletic Conference schools that decided to stay put, particularly Memphis, and say, hey, you know, here's what we got. What do you think? What do you think? I mean, I'm not saying Memphis would take it, but I think the feeling was maybe South Florida and Tulane were more solidly like, yeah, we're ready to stay. And Memphis is like, we're not sure, but if you're not going with us, we'll stay too. So I think if you could maybe sweeten the pot there for Memphis, which I think would be a bad decision, but that's possibly
bad for
what
Memphis
at.
Or bad for the Pac-12?
Yes. I think bad for Memphis. I think it'd be good for the Pac-12. Now, and the other thing now from a basketball standpoint, I think adding Gonzaga is a nice message to Memphis, which is serious about basketball. You know, and you got Gonzaga and San Diego State and Boise and Colorado State that are all good at basketball, and you got a little something going on there.
Yeah. Sac State, they have like a 1,000 seat basketball gym, and the Kings said you can use our NBA arena. I was like,
yeah.
How?
That's another announcement that was rolled out.
I don't
yeah.
know that that's better. There's going to be like 1,000.
No, it'd
people
be worse.
See some of those end of the like really bad Georgetown teams like playing in it.
Yeah, right. Playing the Cap Center or whatever they call it. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. You got to try. Shoot your shot. Shoot your shot, Sac State. What the heck?
They're shooting. They
shoot,
are shooting.
Shoot the shot. Tell them everything. We got everything. Got to give it a.
The latest was the 30. One of the latest was a $35 million raised in NIL money.
Yeah.
$35 million. There isn't $35 million of NIL money in the whole of FCS and Group of Fives combined.
No way. No way.
So, how did they raise $35 million?
Two guys.
I have questions.
You only need a couple of guys.
I have questions, Dan.
Texas Christian built an entire football stadium with seven dudes.
Well, that's Texas. But yeah, I guess, you know,
there's no money in,
money
and there's no money in Northern right. California.
Yeah.
They got money. They got money.
Obviously.
I don't know. I don't know who their alums are, but you could do it. That's all. This has been my dream all along. It's Sac State. Some guys like an eye.
That's been your dream.
I'm a tech billionaire, right?
Yeah.
Hell, right. I'm making Sac State good. We're throwing $35 million. All of a sudden, like half of the Ohio State roster is transferring over. I mean, that would just be hysterical. Like buying a team.
See? Like Stanford would like Jerry Yang to say, you know what? I'm suddenly more interested in athletics. Here's several billion dollars.
Right. All us Yahoo billionaires.
Yeah.
Jerry Yang, good man. Good man.
Yeah.
Dave Filo, shout out to the originals.
There you go.
All right. Yeah. Well, we'll see. It's probably slowing down a little bit here, but that's where we're at. Interesting comments from Greg Sankey. He was on a podcast with Urban Meyer. I got to hear the whole concept of this. I wish they really would. I wish I could interview the two of them about stuff that I'd really want to hear Greg Sankey and Urban Meyer discuss. Like, this could be really good.
Well,
not issues in college sports, but like, you know, what went down when you were in the SEC and Greg was that there's some good stories there. Anyway, this one was interesting and I have my opinion on this, but maybe there's more to it. Greg Sankey was saying that one of the problems with what we've got in, with NIL and the way college football is going is you're basically a professional athlete while you're at these major schools. And certainly some of the guys go on to the NFL, but some of them don't. They make a nice little money, but they get treated really well. But are we preparing the players? This is what he seems to be getting at for life after college. If at 18, they're basically walking into pro sports and then at 22 or 23 or 29, when their college career ends, they have to like go get a regular job. And all of a sudden they're like a regional sales manager or they're, you know, whatever, working pharmaceutical sales or running an enterprise. What is enterprise, right? They're always hiring people.
Enterprise.
Yeah. They're always hyping up. Yeah. You don't go pro in anything else. from Greg Sankey. So how do you go from this experience at the college level where everything's provided? And obviously these facilities, like they now have like barbershops and I mean, you know, right? You don't even have to worry about getting your hair. You have concierge medical care, concierge mental wellness care. You have nutritionists around. You have NIL deals to an entry-level job where you're lost. And we're not going to understand the impact of that reality for a number of years. We should be concerned about that because I think what will happen on the backside of this is there's going to be this new wave of criticism that, wow, look what you did. This sense of perhaps entitlements, that's a word that's used, entitlement or entitlements. Pat, your thoughts on this?
That's actually a mentality that's been ascribed to by people in charge in college athletics for 40 years. I heard that when I was in school and the players, they've got a training table and they've got a scholarship and, you know, and then they're going to come out and they're just not going to know what to do with themselves. There are some where that's the case. For no doubt. There's also some regular students where that's the case. You come out like, oh my God, really? I got to pay my own rent. I got to, you know, yeah, that's called growing up. I don't think this is mutually exclusive to athletes. There may be a more of an identity shift, I think, than an entitlement shift, an identity of this, my sport is my life. And you take that away. And then what are you? Then you got to figure out who you are. I don't think these are people that say, well, wait a minute. Where's the person to come squirt a water bottle in my mouth when I'm thirsty? They're not that. We underestimate, I think, the wherewithal and the intelligence of college athletes all the damn time. And this sounds like that to me. Most of them had to work really hard to be as good as they are. And they can continue to work really hard on the outside. They're smart enough to say, yes, if you will squirt the water bottle in my mouth, I'll let you. And if you'll have a training table for me, that's fine. And if being good at my craft gets me a car while I'm in college, I'll take it. Doesn't mean that they're just going to be just like helpless, like a babe out in the wilderness when they get out. I just think that this paternal instinct of the poor and dumb coddled college athlete's not going to be able to fend for himself. It's been around there for a long time, and it's still there.
Greg, I think he says something. Usually there's something behind it, some kind of meaning that maybe that, you know, is behind it. And I can't because in the same interview, Dan, he talked about, you know, not, quote, dumbing down the Southeastern Conference for some soup, you know, 70-team Super League. And it, you know, that came a day after the college or
proposed tomorrow Super League thing. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. College sports tomorrow.
He's right about all that.
Proposed. Yeah. They say it's not a Super League, but, you know, because it's just, you know, it incorporates all FBS programs. But, you know, it's a different setup, right? And it came a day after that, his comments. So I think there's a lot of referring to that. But this one, I don't necessarily understand. I don't know what was behind this one, except that, you know, when you visit in SEC, but also Big Ten and a lot of power conference programs, and you walk through the facilities, and it's jaw-dropping at the resources at these places. And it is. But like, I don't know why that would mean that athletes who move on would expect that anywhere. So I don't know. I don't understand this one. I saw that earlier, and I don't know. I don't know why he mentioned that. I was trying to think maybe it tied into employment in some way, because he's obviously been a pushback against any employment talk. But I don't know. I don't get this one.
Yeah, it's confusing. But yeah, I agree with Pat. There's a mentality sometimes, and there has been in the past, of, you know, these players can't, you know, we're just scooping. They'd be in jail if it wasn't for college, right? And obviously there's extreme circumstances, but the one thing in covering college sports for as long as I have, I think all of them, I've never not impressed with the majority of the players that I get to talk to. And
100%.
Like, and they hide the players, which I really dislike.
Yeah.
College sports.
Right.
They don't let them talk after games, but very much. Everything's very controlled. But when you meet these players, they're young men and women and all of it, right? You meet a lot of them. I don't obviously cover a lot of Olympic sports, but sometimes and through the Olympics and all of that. And they're super intelligent. They're driven. They're funny. They're college kids, right? And certainly there's tons of kids at college that are sleeping through their class right now because they, you know, were out last night till 2 a.m. Like it's college. Do I think that some of the stuff's utterly ridiculous at the schools? Yes, completely. Right. Do I like when they created a football facility because these control freak coaches just want the guys in the facility all the time? Yes. Would it be better if they had to go find their own place to get a haircut? Sure. But they also get up and run at 6 a.m. and they've got all this stuff. And there's a lot of things that the schools could do, I guess, if this is really a worry. But I've never seen any data like, boy, you go play football, basketball, and then you're unemployable after. Lots of them go on and are very successful. So I don't want to give it all on this to Greg Sankey because maybe there's a deeper thought there, but it is a mentality of that I always find very, very troubling, that it's like we have to protect these poor kids that can't think for themselves. And all the athletes are from incredibly impoverished backgrounds and have no chance with, like, it's just not really the case. And I don't believe it's the case. And maybe their experience is different, but the ones that you get to talk to are more polished or whatever. But I'm always impressed with college athletes. And I find some of the stuff ridiculous, but it's all done for recruiting and all that. So I don't know. This one's weird. I don't really get. It was not, it's something that popped out though. When you have basically the most powerful person, it's like when they tried to say we shouldn't have NIL because these kids don't know that they have to pay taxes, right? And you just go, come on, man. Right. Like, yeah. You get a job, yeah, Scooping ice cream at 15 years old and you get your first paycheck and they go, what is FICA? Who's this FICA dude? Right. Well, this is he's not going anywhere. That's who FICA is. He's there. He'll be there to the end. You're right. And
I still don't know how to pay taxes.
Still don't. Right. Well, you hire an accountant then. Hire an accountant. Yeah. Do you pay taxes, whatever. Ross? Yeah. Do you have a confession to make here?
I don't know. I shouldn't be talking about this. I hope so.
The IRS can find you.
Ivan Glasser, Glasser Associates of Farmington Hills, Michigan, will take care of all your tax accounting needs. It was a great job. I just, when things like this come out, I'm just like, gosh, all right. Okay.
Yeah. And I don't want to like vilify Sankey necessarily, because again, this has been a mindset that's been permeated through college sports for decades. And there is certainly excess in the athletic programs, and they all put it in place, and they did it for recruiting. As you said, Dan, that's, you know,
Urban Meyer being part of this conversation about excess in facilities. Yeah. This is funny.
Yeah.
Like, well,
yeah.
Okay.
And that's it. They've built cocoons that they're, you know, we want you here all the time so we can control everything you do and monitor everything you do. That's an adult problem. That's not the kids' problems. And I always say, as you say, like every time I come away from like a media day or whatever, I say, college athletes are awesome.
Yeah.
They're very smart, driven, interesting people for the most part. Not all of them, but that's the same with regular life. I like being around them. And I will say too, about you hiding them, guess what? With Nick Saban gone and Kalen DeBoer in, we got to talk to a freshman who happened to make the most exciting play of the season so far, Ryan Williams.
And guess what?
We would not have gotten that.
Yeah, and he's really smart.
He was great, right?
He's only 17. Like, he, you guys know he's 17?
Yeah. 17, yeah, that's what I heard about.
Yeah,
heard about
17.
That. But he was like great, like super talkative, bubbly, excited to be there. Like you could tell. And I wish that would happen more often. But hashtag football.
You sit
coaches
there and listen to Ryan Williams go, oh my goodness, if it wasn't for football.
Yeah, this is boring, Bob.
Yeah, this kid's never going to make it. Like, no, this kid's going to be fine. Yeah. He's going to be fine no matter what. Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, all right, we'll be back with the real stuff Fat Bear Week picks. Did Patches make the field? I'm going to leave it with a cliffhanger here. All right. Fat Bear Week. We discussed the, you know, we really, it's just a killing at this point. No charges have been filed. So I can't say it's a murder. Could be justifiable homicide. Could be manslaughter. Could be anything. But Patches did kill. We have video evidence. Patches the bear up in Katmai National Park did kill Bear 404, who has been a regular in Fat Bear Week.
It was 402. 402.
I'm sorry. 404. I don't know what's going on. Oh, yeah. 402. 402 is dead, submerged, and then Patches ate 402. if you don't know, they take pictures of the bears up at Katmai in Alaska, and then everyone votes on who the fattest one is. That's the contest. It's fantastic. We've been doing this thing for years. We were early adopter on this. They had a story. My wife sent me a screenshot from CNN. They were talking about the bear murder. I'm like, Fat Bear Week has CNN.
It's everywhere.
I don't know what that says about Fat Bear Week or CNN, but it's, I mean, when we started this, I think we were the only media outlet covering it. Yeah. The Katmai Daily News. Anyway,
early adopters.
Patches did not make the field, which I think is a huge problem, but he's not in it. So, but he's got other issues, right? He's trying to dodge. Yeah. Probably detectives are coming by. He needs a lawyer up. So we will pick. The contestants are Chunk, Grazer, who did win last year. I mistakenly said Chunk won last year. Grazer won. 151 Walker, he's a regular. Bucky Dent has a bear named after him. 164 Bucky. 747, who I have as a keeper league because he won me the title in both 2020 and 2021. I keep him. I'm a little worried he's like Clemson. I don't know if 747 can still compete at the highest level in the NIL era, the other bear era. 504, 519, 856, 901's a regular, and then Gully, and then 909. We got to name these other bears. Can we get a College Football Inquirer bear?
We should. We should. We should have the pod or pod bear or whatever.
Anyway, Pat, make a pick here. Who you got? You can't take 747.
That's fine. Let's just establish one thing right here and right now. The results of Fat Bear Week do not go into the race for the case results.
It's a tiebreaker.
If I was tried in the past, we're stopping the steal before the steal starts. Okay. let's get that out of the way. By a vote of 3-1, I'm go ahead and counting the votes. I'm going to roll with Grazer.
Yeah.
Like the blonde ears and like that ass. It is a big behind on that bear. That bear is big in the back. And I think Grazer will storm through the bracket.
Okay.
I'm going to take 32 Chunk.
Yeah.
I mean, speaking of big asses, have you seen Chunk's ass? I mean, holy moly. Yeah. But this is why, because I was reading the bio and apparently this past year, season, whatever, eating season, Chunk pushed aside 747 and 856. Yeah. They, quote, yielded space to him for eating. And that ended up paying off, as the biography says. Webcam viewers counted Chunk eating 42 salmon in about a 10-hour span. Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah. Give me Chunk.
Chunk's the Joey Chestnut of the Katmai.
There you go.
Yeah. Chunk's been a contender. It's like Gonzaga basketball. Yeah. Like,
this is Chunk's year.
It's going to break through at Chunk's some point, year, right? Like, they got to win it at some point.
Chunk is always there. Just wait for the right
I think
year
everybody would be happy if Chunk won. Like, you'd be like, all right, Gonzaga won. They kind of deserve it after all these years. All right. Joe?
Ross, you stole my pick. I'm a little bit, I'm a little bit scrambling here now to go for who I want to, because as an amateur scout, you always want weight in the ass when we're talking about offensive linemen. So that's always great logic. I can't push against that. I'm going to go 151 Walker. I love the take here of if anyone establishes dominance in the bio, that's a key thing. So Walker, it says, is he's one of the more dominant Bears. I'm going to go with him. I'm probably not as big in the ass as some of these other guys, but he's hanging a little bit of weight in the gut. So I'm going to go with him.
All solid picks. I think I would have picked. Did you see this picture on 856?
856 definitely swayed me for a bit there.
Yeah. Good Lord. And maybe also, what is 519 doing in this thing? Look at 519. That looks like a wide receiver.
Didn't even try.
Yeah, that's bad. I saw that. Yeah.
519 won the Northeast Conference and got in. Yeah.
519 is on Ozempic. Like, what is
that? He's taking the shots.
What is happening? Why are you in there? Why is Patches not in there?
Yeah. Where is Patches? In jail?
Patches, you know, this is what we got too much. We're overregulated here. Yeah. Oversensitive and overregulated. We're taking Patches out on account of a murder.
Patches wouldn't even want to eat 519 because there's nothing to eat. You're getting smoked 519. 856 would be my that I think 747 is just getting old. I'm sticking with him. Let's go. William Christopher, I'm still buying stock. All right, race for the case. I'm at 19 and I'm doing well. What do we have? We had the records up here somewhere. Oh, well.
Yeah, you're 19 and 11. Joe and I are 18 and 12. Ross 14, is 5. 14, 15 and 1.
All right.
Best week last week for Ross.
5-1. You're right.
5-1
for Ross. Yeah. We all went 4-2. Missouri, number 9 at Texas A&M. A&M is the favorite, 2.5 points. High noon Eastern, ABC. Pat Forty, who you got?
I'm going to take Missouri. I think that they're better than they have necessarily put together so far. I think they will benefit from being an underdog, go on the road, take on the challenge, and they'll show up and win and cover.
I've been saying all offseason and all season about, we talked about Missouri's schedule and how it's doable to get to 11-1 and make the playoff. I think A&M wins and covers.
I'm going to go with Missouri on this one. Statistically, Missouri's defense has been one of the best in the country so far. They've actually had a couple of tests early on against Boston College. And the game against Vanderbilt, I think, is underrated for getting them ready for a game like this. Rushing attack is everything for A&M. Marcel Reed and Le'Veon Moss have been the reason why they've stayed afloat. I think that Missouri run defense steps up. I'm going to take Missouri to cover and win as well.
I'm taking Missouri, but A&M scares me. But I agree with Joe on last week's double overtime scare with Vandy is a good thing for Missouri. So I'm going to grab
Lone Aggie.
Lone Aggie.
It's the only way for me to catch up.
Lone Aggie. Yep. SMU at number 22, Louisville. Sneaky good game. Louisville given 7. Noon, ESPN. Ross.
SMU made the quarterback change, moving away from Preston Stone to Kevlin Jennings. They've been playing really well. I think they've been playing well enough to stay within a touchdown of Louisville. I haven't seen Louisville play much. They haven't played the toughest early season schedule. So I think at least SMU hangs in there if they don't have a shot here in the end to win the game.
Yeah, boy, is this an interesting game, Dan. I think if you want to know who might play Clemson or Miami in the ACC title game, these are the other two contenders. Like, obviously, I think Miami and Clemson right now are up top, but these two are the next level, I think, in the ACC. And the winner here, I think this is one of those ladder games in that conference. I've been very impressed with SMU since the quarterback change, going to Kevin Jennings that Ross alluded to, and pretty explosive. Louisville's good, but I'm not sure this team is as good as last year's Louisville team. I'm going to say that SMU can certainly go in and cover. Don't know whether they win, but 7 points, this could be a field goal game, so I'm taking the Mustangs.
I'm rolling with Louisville here. Louisville's been a bit of a tough out when they're playing at home. That stadium has been rocking when they're stepping up into these games where, you know, must-win situation to bounce back from the Notre Dame game. I also think with Louisville's case, I feel like everyone's getting a little hyped up after the way that they smoked Florida State this past week. And we need to remind ourselves the current state that Florida State is in. Louisville looked very not as competent offensively as we thought that they were against Georgia Tech, as they did against Notre Dame. I still think that former G5 program, there's going to be a separation point against a program that's built physically on both lines of scrimmage. So I'm going to take Louisville. I think they cover the 7.
I like SMU with 7. The points help me a lot here. I think they're banging along here, and much better than they were at the start. Number 12, Ole Miss, giving 9.5 at South Carolina. Cock Commanders, home dogs, home Cock Commander, or no, dogs, Cock Commander dogs. I would just go, whatever. I just wanted to say Cock Commanders, obviously, as many times as possible, because every day that you say the term Cock Commanders is a better day than if you didn't. That's just fact. 3:30 on ESPN. Pat, who you got?
Yo soy el Cock Commander. Shane Beamer at home getting 9.5. I'll take the Cocks here. Ole Miss could come out having awakened and smoke them. That's possible. But I'll take South Carolina at home getting that many points. May not win, but they'll cover.
Yeah, this seems like a ton of points for Ole Miss to be South Carolina to be getting at home. And Sellers is back, right? Or supposed to be back. Give me the Cox, maybe not to even just cover here, but to win the game.
It's officially October 3rd, meaning it is Cocktober for those who celebrate it. I think for this game that Ole Miss is going to win it. They desperately need it for everything that you guys talked about in the opening segment. However, 9.5 feels super wide for Ole Miss to cover. South Carolina, their defense has been incredibly smothering. They're going to get a turnover. They're going to get big sacks. They're going to get big tackles for loss. Even if Ole Miss does pull out this game, the LSU performance is indicative that they can go toe-to-toe with some of these upper middle of the pack teams in the SEC. So I'm taking South Carolina. Yeah, as
South
well.
Carolina also won 31-6 at Kentucky, who just beat.
Yeah.
One of my losses, I fell for I thought Vegas knew too much in Penn State, Illinois spread the other day. Sometimes Vegas tricks you because they're like, you're like, that doesn't make any sense, but then it does. No, this doesn't make sense. I'm taking South Carolina. I don't see it. Yeah. To Pat's point, could Ole Miss all of a sudden hit everything and score 60 points on them? Sure. I think Ole Miss is capable of doing that against pretty much everybody, but it didn't last week. And this is a team that scored 31 at Kentucky. South Carolina beat 31-6 Kentucky. So I'm not going with it. Number 8, Miami at Cal. Miami is giving 10.5, as we said at the Calgram or whatever they're calling it.
Calgarithm.
Yeah. Coke versus woke. Graham, tremendous.
I love that. I got to get that shirt.
Great shirt.
That is so
the funny. Best is that Cal Berkeley, for one time, is not the drug, like you have no standing here, Cal.
This is a heavyweight drug battle, really, no in terms standing of
rap. Oh, those I mean, kids
Berkeley
do drugs.
Miami. Whoa.
Okay, Cal Berkeley. Didn't know we were a BYU of the Bay Area. Kane's given 10.5. 10:30 p.m. on ESPN.
Good.
ACC after dark.
Wait, this is going to end 2:15 a.m. Eastern time. I mean, brutal.
I'll make a pick.
Okay, Dan. Don't be pushy.
Got to do your coat. All right, so stay up all night with it.
That's right. Snort a little bit here. 10.5. Again, we have a home team, you know, in a game where I don't think there's that much difference. I mean, there's difference in the teams, let's be honest. But 10.5 at home, I like Cal to stick around this game a little bit. We saw Miami struggle against Virginia Tech. We saw them struggle first 2.5 quarters against South Florida a little bit and moving the ball, turning the ball over. And Cal's playing pretty good defense. They have struggled moving the ball. But they've played good enough defense. I think they haven't allowed more than 14 points this season, Cal. So I think they stay close enough. I don't know that they win this one, but they stay close enough. Maybe give me like a, you know, a 23-17 type of game here, and Cal covers at home.
I'm with you. Cal has not allowed more than 17. Miami has not scored less than 38. So who wins that battle? I'm concerned about Cal's offensive line. I watched him against Florida State. That's not a great unit, but the defense is really good. They're going to be at home. The body clock may be an issue, Miami.
What? The clubs don't even travel? Open till 2 a.m. in Miami. What do we?
Yeah, that's true.
This game's 7:30.
I'm taking Cal to cover the number. As long as it doesn't turn into a track meet of any kind, this has to start slowly and stay slow for most of the game for Cal. If it gets into trying to score 28, 30, 40, 35 points, they in trouble.
There's two key variables for this game. One, Cal is the most successful team this year at turning opponents over. And I know Peyton Thorne was one of those quarterbacks that they went up against, but they've got 10 interceptions on the year. Cam Ward is tremendous and he's so fun to watch, but we know his style of play requires a lot of risk taking. So he had two picks that almost took them out of the game against Virginia Tech. He's going to have an interception in this game. I would be stunned if he goes without turning the ball over against Cal. And the second thing, there's a lot of truth to the body clock situation here. I oftentimes in my personal life, when I place bets, it's legal in New Jersey. I don't want to hear anyone give me crap for that, by the way. Whenever I place real bets, though, I love to take an East Coast team traveling all the way to the West Coast to play in a night game slot. Especially, this is worse than any pro situation where you have to play at 10:30 body clock. So I think that is going to factor into this. It's a long, long trip for a student athlete. I think Miami wins, but 10.5 might be a bit tricky for them to cover that spread.
I think the Miami defensive line is going to live in the Cal backfield, so I'm taking the U. Not worried. Body clock. Live nightclub. Like, come on. 4 or 5 a.m. Miami kids are ready to roll. This is disrespectful. This is disrespectful to the University of Miami.
Quick protocol issue. We don't use student athlete on this podcast unless it's in mocking terms.
Well, apparently they're so pampered they can't even get a job and can't even work. So Rutgers at Nebraska. Mentioned it earlier. Nebraska is giving 7, 4 p.m. on FS1. This game deserves better, but FS1, all right. Take it. Whose turn? Pat? Yeah. Ross? I don't know.
It's me. I'm going 5 for 5 dogs. I like Rutgers here for a lot of the reasons I kind of like Cal's. I do think this is a shrink the game special for Schiano. He's good at that sort of thing. I think he can instill some doubt and probably some mistakes into Rayola. And I think this sets up well for Rutgers to at least cover, possibly even win outright.
Agree. Give me Manungai and the Rutgers defense to do enough to stay within the 7 if not win the game.
Yeah, I'm sticking with you guys here too. Got to support my hometown team, the Rutgers Scarlet Knights. They're running the ball really well. Their offensive line has been one of the best in the country. Going up against a young Nebraska squad, they've already dropped one at home. So I got to stick with Rutgers. They're a hot team. They're going to find a way to win.
I'll take Rutgers. I'll take those points. That works for me. Same thing. I think it'll be a very slow, drawn-out game by Greg Schiano. So 7's a lot. All right, lock of the week. Who's got one? Anyone done any research?
Yep.
All right, Pat has. All right. Good job, Pat.
Yep. As I alluded to earlier, I'm taking Clemson and laying the points. I took 5 dogs.
That was so easy.
I took dogs in the regular picks, but I'm laying the lumber here. Clemson is on a roll. Florida State's in disarray. If they're starting Brock Glenn, oh my God, it's going to get worse. I think Clemson wins.
What is this spread? In what world are we coming 21. Up with 14.5? Is the only, like?
I don't know.
I don't understand.
I thought this would be 21 for sure.
Yeah, I saw it. I was like, it's got to be 20.5, something like that. I don't. 14.5, Florida State. I don't. This one's crazy. Good pick. Good pick. Shouldn't have gone on protocol. Should have just grabbed it.
The reason why I wanted this one, it's another Dabo special, which is right now very successful on this season. I just would like to point this out. Him against the narrative, and the narrative in this one is the transfer portal. So he's going to find a way to win with a statement. I'll throw mine out there, though, my second pick that I had. Florida plus 2.5 versus UCF. I think a lot of people forget oftentimes the separation between the SEC and the Big 12. UCF might be a quality Big 12 team. Florida might be a complete mess, but there is no way that UCF has the bodies on their lines of scrimmage to keep up with Florida. So I think Florida at home can at the very least cover, but I'd even take the money line.
USC travels to Minnesota, Dan. It's not going to be cold. It's going to be like 70 degrees. Thankfully, they travel there in early October and not in November. And I think the Trojans are 8.5 point point favorite. I think they cover that. I think they win big there in Minneapolis. And look out. I know they lost at Michigan, but I think the Trojans getting back on track here to be that team that I think many predicted to be in the conversation, the playoff conversation.
All right. Had a few looking at. I'm baffled by the I'm not going to take this game, but I'm a little baffled by Northern Illinois, only 17.5 point favorite over UMass. Don't see that one. I would take Northern Illinois in that. But it's not going to be my lock because I can't say that I've watched a whole lot of that, any of that. In the Michigan-Washington game, I find very intriguing, but I don't know who to pick. Washington's giving 2.5 to Michigan. Tends to make me think Michigan should win. I think Michigan should win that football game, but I don't know. Michigan is, who knows? So staying away from that. The other one that's fascinating, Duke's 5-0 going to Georgia Tech. Georgia Tech's giving 9. Like, that's kind of crazy.
That seems pretty nuts for how. Yeah.
I don't know what happened with these lines. There's a lot of drunk lines. Like maybe because they spent all their money paying the UNLV kids that they out there or something like that. They have to do. I don't know what happened. Anyway, I am going to take though Arizona State giving 2.5 against Kansas. Kansas lost 4 consecutive games. It has been a disaster of a season that once seemed pretty promising. They got to travel out there. The body clock, I mean, it's an 8 p.m. game, so they're going to be playing at 10 o'clock Kansas time. I just think this has been a disjointed season. Arizona State's coming off a bye. They had a tough loss at Texas Tech, but it was a good game. I think Arizona State wins and covers that and moves to 4-1 in the Big 12. So those are my picks.
I like that. Also, Ross and Pat completely bailed on us in the last couple of minutes.
I both had to leave.
A little disappointing. Yeah.
This is how this podcast goes. We go a little long, everyone bails. That's how committed we all are. I don't know. Anyway, that's our show. If you're still listening, you should bail. We'll be back Sunday to discuss, overreact to everything that happened on Saturday. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you later.